Today we're going to start Parshat Bo. We have an action-packed shiur ahead of us. We're going to draw in all the elements that we began speaking about last time and hopefully try to bring all of them to their conclusion. And to do that, we're going to stay focused. I hope I have clarity. I hope you all have clarity. And if there are questions along the way, please ask. We're going to try to really pull together a bunch of really fantastic pieces together today. On Monday, we concluded our discussion, our unfortunately very brief discussion of Parshat Va'era. And in Parshat Va'era, we saw that it was very interesting that we were introduced to the Aseret HaMakot, despite the fact that we don't see all the Aseret HaMakot. But that being said, we have this system of the Aseret HaMakot. And what we asked was, well, is that the only system of 10 that we see significantly playing out over the course of Jewish history, or history in general? And the answer was no. If it says Aseret, 10 has to be important, and we have other things that have 10 in it. What are those systems of 10 that play out over the course of history? And for our purposes, we're focusing on 3, which is before the Aseret HaMakot, we have... Or not the Aseret, but the Asara. No? No. Asara Ma'amarot. And after the Aseret HaDibrot, we have... No, the other way. After the Aseret HaMakot, we have... The Aseret HaDibrot. We have the Aseret HaDibrot. And we noted that if these all are called by their number of 10, that 10 is intrinsically meaningful just because there happen to be 10 of each of them. And also in the fact that they're all defined by the fact that they're 10 and must therefore be linked to one another. And we suggested that there might even be some parallels, which we'll come back to hopefully later on in Shiur. But we noticed that it was interesting that while the Aseret HaMakot are clearly a system and a system of 10, in the fact that we call them the Aseret HaMakot, then logically we would have assumed that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu, when Chazal, when however it may be, Baruch HaKodesh, Nevuah, by Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, however the Torah, when the Torah was divided up into Parshiot, that the Parshiot are intentional, and therefore, if you have call it Parshat Shmot, then Parshat Makot, then Parshat Bo. But what is it Parshat Va'era, which only has 7, and then Parshat Bo, which has another 3? At which point we brought in one more system of 10 that exists, Alfi Kabbalah. Which is the Aseret, the 10 Sfirot. And we pointed out that included within the Sfirot are... Save myself from a whole bunch of love in there. Gross. Okay, from the Sfirot, there are... we define the Sfirot as the 10 created things through which God guides his world. And we recognize that phrase from something which we've talked about previously many times, which are the Midot, what we've been referring to as the Midot. And so in the Midot, which are still here, we have Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, and Malchut. And we said that yes, while there are 7 midot, and we've been spending a lot of time in these shirim over the last year and a half, understanding to the best of our ability what these midot are, how it applies practically to our lives, how to internalize them, how to live them, how to utilize them, what it means that God himself utilizes them and expresses them through different names. These are all defined as midot, and we focused on particularly chesed, gevura, tiferet, yisod, somewhat on malchut. We mentioned Netzach, we were talking about Moshe Rabbeinu very briefly. But that above these are the lower 7. And above these, there are an upper 3. And there are 2 ways to look at it, which we talked about last time. Either Chochma, Bina, and Da'at, or in some systems, Da'at is a little bit more hidden and behind the scenes, and Ketzer will be on top. Either way, you still get a system of 10. Nobody's going to argue the fact that there are 10. And those are the 10 Sfirot. What we noticed was fascinating is that just like the Sfirot are divided into the lower 7 and an upper 3, what else is divided into 7 and 3? The Makot themselves through the Parshiot. Hinting to that very differentiation within the system itself. Because nothing in Torah lacks meaning. Everything is soaked with meaning. And nothing in Torah or its divisions are arbitrary. And so the Torah is indicating to us a distinctive split between seven of the Makot and three of the Makot, or seven of the system of ten and three of the system of ten. And as we mentioned last time, which we'll hopefully pour some content into today, as opposed to the Asara Ma'amarot and the Aseret HaDibrot, the ten Makot are actually working in reverse order, from the bottom up. And as we saw, we looked at Pesukim last time, in Parshat Va'era, it goes through beat by beat, emphasizing the fact that these first seven Makot, which are linked to the lower seven Sfirot, are teaching Mitzrayim and Paro, who says, who is this God? I know what God is. I am God. God exists in the land. God is in the Yor, whatever it is, however one understands it. There are other Pesukim that indicate that Paro assumed that he is his own God. He created himself. How he managed to delude himself into such a space is unclear. But we know that Gaava can easily confuse a person on tremendously deep levels. But whether it's that he saw himself as God or whether they looked at the land itself as God, Pesukim go out of their way to point out that these Makot are coming in order that they should know that God is the God in the land. God is the God in the lower spheres. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only force, is the only power, is the only meaningful force in the lower realms. And so as we transition to Parshat Bo, we're moving into the last of the last three of the Makot, which are Keneged, the more source, the more root spaces in the Sirot, which all of these Midot stem from, these upper realms up here. And the more root spaces, even when we come back to the Asara Ma'amarot and the Aseret HaDibrot. Questions, thoughts, comments on that very brief summary of what we discussed last time? What does the Parsha open with? What's the beginning of the Parsha? What word? Also noting the fact that Parshas tend to take on the first word in the Parsha. Correct. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. Bo el Paro. Bo, which means come in. Meaning there's also a differentiation here that's being established in terms of Va'era versus Bo. Bo is telling us, come in. We're moving into a deeper place. We're moving into a more central place. I said last time that it seems to me that the Bo, Bigamatra, being three, is relating to these three Makot. So I must have, when I listened to my Rebbe's Shirim a while ago, before I prepared it again for this Shiur, he actually quotes the Baal HaTurim, who says exactly that, so I didn't come up with it, nor did I make it up. Both of those things are true. The Baal HaTurim points out that Bo is Gematria, is three, is to connect those three Makot. Rebbe also quotes the Zohar, which is telling Klal Yisrael, come into these deeper realms. We talked about many times, and we mentioned it last time, that the lower Sfirot over here are Keneged the Aretz. It's the lower realms. This is like the Aretz. And that's who of the two nations, which one is remaining linked to, embedded in the Aretz, in the lower part of themselves? Mitzrayim. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu begins this Parsha by saying what? Bo. Come into these higher realms. Into the upper realms. Who is he speaking to then? Abraham. Now watch the transition in the Pesukim as well to reflect exactly what you just said. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe bo'al paro, ki ani echbarti et libo ve'et lev avadav, leman shiti et ototai ela bikirbo. Ulema'an, remember that key word from last time, why these makot are happening? There's an ulema'an here. Hear the words. Uleman to saper beozne bincha, bnei uvein bincha, To whom are these makot more specifically geared toward in terms of their message? To whom is that ulema'an? Louder? B'nai Yisrael. There was no mention of B'nai Yisrael previously. And as we transition these parshiot, we go from makot, which are lema'an, in order that Mitzrayim should know that I am Hashem b'kerev ha'aretz, to bow, come deeper into these higher three spaces, to a space which you are much more relating to higher realms of existence, to deeper places which are more relevant to you. Come into that space to the extent where now we can talk about lima'an, or rather ulima'an, that you can now learn on a way that's more relevant to you, in a way that only you are going to be able to understand in this deeper level. Vidatem, you Klal Yisrael, vidatem ki ani Hashem. Vidatem ki ani Hashem. Which also harkens back to what? In this emphasis on, now you Klal Yisrael will know, vidatem ki ani Hashem. Think back to two Shirim ago. Moshe, I'm about to start off the process of redemption, and I need you to do something for me. Lachein amor livnei Yisrael ki ani Hashem, yud kei vav kei. Watch the parallel here. Right? This is that revelation. There's no ani Hashem Elokichem. Vidatem ki ani Hashem. They will know that I am that God, yud kei vav kei. That's coming out. That's the message that's coming out to you to call Israel. And that's coming out in these upper three midot, in these deeper makot, in these upper three sfirot. What makes these three, the upper three, what makes them the sources, what makes them the root? So we began to talk about it last time. Let's unpack it a little bit further. Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Are the makot that are backwards, Justin, but you wrote, like, these three makot that we're talking about are like,
everything is working its way backwards from beginning to end. Meaning, 10th plague and moving up.
Right. So, ones that are on the three,
Whatever deeper level ones, those makot are down for day and Kenan. Because you're going backwards. No, so afuch. The first, meaning while it's the first plague, it's connected the 10th of the Dibrot, or the 10th of the Mamarot.
Right.
That's the only one that flipped its order, and we'll talk about that hopefully in a few minutes. So, Dam would be connected the last of the Mamarot, the last of the Dibrot.
Right.
These three would be connected, the first three of the Mamarot and the first three of the Dibrot. Nochi Hashem, Lotzi Selach. No?
Right, and which Makot would they be connected?
The last three.
Okay. My brain's not working this time.
The Asara Mamarot are going one direction, the Asara Dibrot are going this direction, and the Makot are going in the opposite direction. They're gonna be inversely lined up. Okay. So we talked about it in terms of also, we began to talk about last time about these upper three being more source, being more roots. Right, and those who are in Derech Hashem now understand why the root is on the top and the branches are down below. We did that yesterday and people were either enlightened or confused. The roots are always toward the top. In Kabbalistic systems, the roots of things are always toward the top because the true source of everything in this world is really what? Shemayim. Or Hashem, but from Shemayim. Coming down. So even though we imagine things in this world as working from the ground up, really that's part of it being an Alma D'Shikra. Really the world functions with its source up top and it trickling down below. And therefore, Al Pi Kabbalah, you'll always see the representation being an upside-down tree with the roots in the heavens and the trunk bringing it down and the branches and the leaves down below in this world. Same thing here, everything is it's upside down. The roots are the upper three and the branches or the extensions are the lower seven. In any event, the lower seven are then representing the aretz, the lower part of one's being, not like not necessarily in a purely negative way, meaning we've been talking about these midot extensively because they're incredibly important and significant and deep. The seven midot. But those midot, as we mentioned, are seated where? In the body. In the limbs. But if we were to condense them into one space, which we did last time?
Centered at the heart.
Centered in the heart. Right, centered around the heart. They're seated in the heart. Our midot, our attributes, our characteristics, our character traits, the way we express ourselves, stem from our midot. They're seated in our heart. Where are the upper three seated? And it's very clear. Keter, or rather, let's take Keter out of the equation for a minute and talk about the other ones. Chochma, Bina, and Da'at. Where are those going to be seated?
In the Rosh.
In the Rosh, in the head. Higher up. More source. More root. And as we talked about last time, we briefly said last time, the source of the way that we emotionally interact with the world, even if we're in full, let's say we do conquer all of our midot, and we're in full control of our midot, and we're intentionally utilizing our midot, what determines how I choose to utilize those midot? My perception, my perspective, my understanding. So on the one level, I want to make sure that I've conquered my midot and I'm intentionally utilizing my midot, my character traits in who I am. Why am I acting with chesed? Why am I acting with gvura? Why am I interacting with this person in a way where I want to help them? Do I really want to help them? Am I compelled to help them for other reasons? Why am I pushing this person away? Is it because I need to define boundaries for myself? Is it because I'm reacting to something that's coming from a place of being hurt inside? Am I in control or am I midot in control? So on the one level, one wants to work on a very practical level to gain ownership over those midot. But the way in which then I also want, once I've taken control of them, once I've grabbed the reins, even if I have full control of the body, which is the more animalistic side, so even if you want to take the analogy fully, even if I've grabbed control, even if I've grabbed the reins of the horse that is my body, if I, in my mind, don't have a sense of what the destination is, where I want to take it, the fact that I have control over the horse is irrelevant to the point. Similarly, if my mind is in an amazing, wonderful, and out there place, and I have tremendous hasagot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Judaism and God, but I have no control over myself, if I know exactly where I want to go, but I have no ability to grab the reins or guide the horse, I'm also going to be totally lost. In both cases, I don't get to my destination. Both are significant, but one is drawn from a deeper place. Having the right perspective, forging that perspective, is coming from a deeper place. That's the source, that's the root. Then I'm going to desperately try to grab those reins because I know where I want to go. And if I could just grab the reins, I'd know what I was doing. Why would I want to grab the reins if I have no idea why I'm going anywhere? So this is more root, this is more source, but both are incredibly important and significant. Having rulership over the mind, the clarity of perspective, and then utilizing that, once I've conquered my midot, to utilize my midot based on that perspective that I've internalized. Within these upper three sfirot that exist within the mind, we have Chochma, Bina, and Da'at. What are Chochma, Bina, and Da'at? As long as we're engaging these a little bit. I think we discussed this way in the beginning of Bereshit, but it's worth going over again either way. Chochma, Bina, and Da'at, although they sound very similar, are actually very distinct stages that exist within the mind. Chochma, what is Chochma? Chochma means the initial moment of contact with information. When I'm taking the information in from a source. If you've never experienced the concept of Chochma before, you're experiencing it right now, very literally. I am giving over the concept of Chochma, and you are taking it in. You're all quickly writing it down in your notebooks. I want to remember this. I don't know what this is. I want to take down the definition exactly as it said. That's Chochma. I'm taking it and I have no relationship with that knowledge. I'm simply absorbing that knowledge. It's external and I'm beginning to try to bring it inside. It's coming in from the outside. Once it's entered into that system, I need to process it. I need to make sense of it. I need to fit it into my paradigms and understand what it means. I need to build myself a structure in which that new information has context. What is the Hebrew word for building a building or building a structure? Livnot. Livnot binyan. Lahavin. Bina. The process of processing the information, the process of internalizing that information, the process of making sense of that information, part of who I am and what I am, that's the process of Bina. Then comes the final step. The final step is when myself and that knowledge are then one and the same. It becomes part of the fabric of my being. I'm not looking at it from the outside. I'm not struggling to internalize it. But when myself and that knowledge are one, when it's part of my worldview, when it's part of the way I see things, when it's second nature to me, when I'm walking through a complicated structure and passing it along to somebody else in a way where there's no notes in front of me, because it's something which I've spent a lot of time trying to work on and figure out, that's when I've worked to a certain level of creating da'at for myself within the context of that knowledge. That's why many people quote the original time, the first time, or one of the first times that the concept of da'at comes up in Chumash is in the beginning of Perek Daled, in the story of Adam and Chava and Cain and Hevel. V'adam yada et Chava ishto. What does it mean in that context? That Adam and Chava were physically intimate. Implying what? That there was a complete connectivity and union between the two of them that produced new life. The two became one on all levels of being. Da'at is when two things come together and fuse into one. And that's when that knowledge becomes part of who I am, part of my worldview, part of who I am. That's what's happening in very simple terms in the upper sphirot, in the distinctions between Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at. And coming back to what we said before, what we're meant to do then is guide our lives in a very powerful way. Very powerful way. Is that we're meant to guide our lives both from the mind to come to a pure place of Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at, and from our heart and our midot. And that plays out in everything in life. In everything that we do in life, we always have to make sure that a balance is struck where we're acting based on both of those places. That we're having legitimate emotional reactions to things, but that those emotional reactions perhaps aren't reactions, but maybe are intentional responses that are coming from a thoughtful place. But if it's not coming from a place of a pure internalization and perspective, and it's not coming from a place where I'm reacting and in control of what those reactions are based on that perspective, something's missing. Practical example. So some in this room now, some in this room later. Concept of the idea of dating very much comes into play. There are two distinctly important components in the process of dating. This is just one example. But there are two distinctly important processes in dating. Sometimes a person will come in there and they'll say, I want to talk to you. I'm dating this person. This particular conversation never happens, an exaggerated version of it, but conversations certainly have happened before. I met this person. They're amazing. We have great conversation. We connect. We're able to sit up till 1 o'clock in the morning and talk about all the things in the world. This person it's clearly the one. We connect at every level of being. It's one time this conversation actually happened on this campus with me. We're one person. We're meant to be together. I say, great. What's the problem? She's not Jewish. He's not Jewish. What's the difference? What happened there? What's the reaction? On the level of that individual's midot, everything is perfectly in place. What's missing? The upper realms. The perspective. What's my perspective on this? What presumptions am I coming in with? And the same is true on the flip side. And every you'll hear this generally, I find, more frequently with women than with men. In the contact that I've had with people talking to me about dating on at least this campus. The person is perfect, they're amazing, they learn all the time, they're a Baal Chesed, they're a Baal Midot, they're an incredible person, the way they think, the way they interact with the world, it's everything that I'm looking for. So I say, great, what's the problem? I'm not really attracted to him. There's not really chemistry, like, everything he says makes sense to me. Everything he says is what I'm looking for, but like, you know, like, that's basically it. It's kind of parv. That's a huge problem also. Working only from perspective, but not allowing it to penetrate into the level of the heart and the level of midot, also is not going to work. Both of those marriages will likely fail. Very big parentheses, and very much from my own limited perspective and personal perspective. That's why, personally, I think that one of the best ways to go about dating is to take advantage intentionally of both parts of the system. I'm a big fan of not being a big fan of the shidduch system, but utilizing it anyway. Why? You start with the Rosh. You go and you investigate the other person and find out, do we have the same philosophy? Do we have similar goals in life? Does the person have good midot? I want to know, is this somebody who, if I have chemistry with them, I could marry them and have a happy life without us being on totally different planets in the Rosh? And then once I've gone through the process of carefully, not too carefully, you don't want to be too exclusive in terms of who you date, but carefully knowing, is this person within the realm of people that I could be the one? Then start dating them and drop the shadchan as soon as possible. Because the two of you should be talking and interacting, and the two of you should find out, do you have chemistry? And if it's tough to talk out whether you want to continue, that's good. Learn how to talk to each other. Especially in this generation where nobody talks to each other. Texting doesn't count. Facebook messaging doesn't count. Emailing doesn't count. I don't know if anybody even emails anymore except for me. Doesn't count. Can I talk to you? Can I express to you when we're having problems? Can I say I'm not sure if we should go forward? Can I have that conversation after a couple of dates? But I think it's very important to start with your Rosh in place. Because the second you get on the date, what's the goal on that date? Is to figure out, is there chemistry on the level of Midot, on the level of the Lev, is there a connection there? Doing it retroactively is very problematic. It's much harder when you meet someone and the chemistry is there to try to retroactively figure out if the two of you have the same perspective and it's going to work. Because the heart will then confuse the mind. You're then going from the roots, from the branches to the root, and not from the root to the branches. And that totally distorts your perspective. And if you start with perspective and don't let yourself see and experience whether or not there's a level of chemistry there, then your perspective may trick you into going into a place where there is no lev, where there is no connection on a midot level. And that's deeply problematic as well. Things are as lemaisa as can be. And that's just one example. Clear? Questions, thoughts, comments? Questions, thoughts, comments that you don't want to say now. Just raise your hand if you're like, I have some things to think about that, but I don't want to show them right now. Good. Nervous laughter was exactly what I was going for. Fantastic. Okay. Tov. In the few remaining moments that we don't have, what I'd like to do is take it one last stage further. Okay? Thank God all these things go up on the internet and people can make it up if they have to walk out. It's fine. I take it back. I have convert today. That's a lot to think about, a lot to chew on. We've yet to answer the question of why these things are in opposite order. We'll pick up immediately on Monday with plugging this back into the Asara Mamarot, Makot, and Dibrot, understanding what this process is from Mamarot to Makot to Dibrot, and why it requires a reversal of the order in between. We'll pick up with that, the Zrat Hashem, on Monday.